Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 228, Butcher on the Block with Matt Moore. Thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I am Roger, your host, and this is the podcast all about home cooking, getting in the kitchen, learning new things, having fun. And today I've got a great episode and a great guest lined up. In a few minutes, we're going to be speaking with Matt Moore, author of the new book, Butcher on the Block, Everyday Recipes, Stories, and Inspirations from Your Local Butcher and Beyond. It's a great conversation. We talk about butcher shops, favorite cuts of meat, all sorts of stuff like that. Stick around for that, of course. Before we get there, though, we do have to do a little bit of housekeeping. Most importantly are the show notes for this episode. So the show notes, which will include links to all the stuff that Matt and I talk about in our conversation, is over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/228. Again, that's kitchencounterpodcast.com/228. Pop that into your favorite web browser and you'll find the show notes again with all the stuff that Matt and I talk about in this conversation. And along with that, links to my social media, links to the Nitty Grits Network, which if you've been listening to the show now for a little while, you'll know that's a network of shows about food, drink, and culture out of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum in New Orleans, Louisiana, the Nitty Grits Network. This show is a part of that, is home to other great shows. If you're a food, drink, or culture, or cooking person, you definitely want to head over to southernfood.org and check it out. Oh boy, our spring of weird weather here in the Pacific Northwest, or at least in the Willamette Valley in Oregon, continues. I think on my last episode, I might have mentioned we had a couple days of good weather. Well, that didn't last very long. And it was just this last weekend I was able to actually bust out some grilling. I cleaned up my grill a week or two ago. I've been waiting to get some use out of it. And look, I don't want to hear from the people who can grill and barbecue and cook in their backyard all year around. I think that's really amazing, but I just don't do it. I can't do it, so I don't want to hear about it. Actually, truth be told, if I could cook outside all year round, if I could grill all the time, I'd probably get bored of it. So it's a good thing that over the winter months, I can't really do much of that because it really hypes me up for it and I really get excited for it. So I can really, blast out of the cannon for outdoor cooking, grilling season, whatever you want to call it. And actually this weekend then I was able to finally get my Kamado grill up and running. Started off, simple, slow, made some kebabs, got a tri-tip, cut that up into some nice chunks, marinated it with some, with a teriyaki pineapple concoction, and then threw some veggies on some skewers. And so, yeah, we did some kebabs. So we did tri-tip, teriyaki pineapple, tri-tip kebabs. I got some onions, some bell pepper, that kind of stuff. Did those up as well. It was great. It was great, easy, quick, and a good start to the grilling season. So it's going to be in the 90s, I think, next weekend. So I'm really going to have to transition from indoor to outdoor cooking pretty quickly, come up with some other stuff. Lucky for me, today I talk to Matt Moore, who, as I mentioned at the very beginning of the introduction, is the author of Butcher on the Block, which is a new cookbook coming out the day that actually this episode is dropping. I say cookbook. We'll talk about it in the conversation. It's not a strict cookbook in the strict sense of the word. It has a ton of recipes and a ton of really great recipes. And I say butcher, I say meat. Matt corrects me several times in this conversation. It's not just meat we're talking about in this book, but he's got fish, he's got vegetarian, he's got vegan options as well. But if you want to start getting to know the world of meat, fish, poultry, that kind of stuff a little bit better, and you maybe want to start seeking out some interesting, new, different sources for those ingredients. I think this is a great book because it does talk about the concept of the neighborhood butcher shop, if you will. And in the book, Matt visits several around the country to give a sort of an inside look at what's happening in the world of butchery, if you will, in the United States and even abroad. Now, I know some of you might be familiar with your neighborhood butcher if you're lucky enough to have one near you. Maybe you go to the butcher all the time. I still think there you'll find this conversation interesting, maybe even more interesting than folks who have no idea who what a butcher does or where they could even find a butcher. Or maybe your only exposure to a butcher is like you remember from the Brady Bunch, Sam would bring Alice a couple of pounds of ground round, you know, before they'd go bowling or something like that. But in all seriousness, if you're a home cook and you're interested where your ingredients come from, you're interested in understanding better the source of your ingredients, especially things like meat, poultry, fish, you'll find this conversation especially interesting. So without further ado, let's jump right into this conversation with Matt Moore, author of Butcher on the Block. Matt Moore, thanks for being on the show today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
So you got a new book coming out. Actually, the day this episode is going live, you've got a new book coming out. Butcher on the Block, Everyday Recipes, Stories, and Inspirations from Your Local Butcher and Beyond. I get a lot of questions from listeners about meat. I don't know. I'm a meat eater. I'm a meat cooker. Have been all my life. So meat doesn't intimidate me, but it intimidates a lot of people, I think, who aren't used to cooking it. So I think this will be an interesting conversation because, well, this is going to be a meat-centric podcast episode, I think.
Yeah, I mean, in theory, butchering has come a long way. And the first line of the book is that this is not a book about butchering per se, rather it's about the butcher. So we do actually feature, you know, plenty of meat, wild game. But I did want to make it an all-encompassing book as well. So we venture into seafood, and then we also go down the path of vegetable butchering. So really my job is to come in as a writer and travel not only here in the U.S., but also in Europe as well, and just present to you a cast of characters and people and ingredients. And the idea is that by fostering that relationship with your local butcher, it creates a lot of inspiration for you to go home and, as a home cook myself, kind of start the meal at the butcher. And that looks quite differently than just the traditional meat shops that might conjure up originally.
Yeah, you actually raise a good point. You have fish in here. You have stuff that I wouldn't ordinarily consider like in the world of butchering, like fishmongering maybe, but you've got fish and other stuff. The other thing I really like about your book, and I guess if I could take a stab at describing the book, like if somebody wanted to buy it, it's like part travel food essay, part recipe, part, and maybe a smaller part, like fundamentals of actual butchery. So you do have some basic, like how to break down a chicken, how to cut a, you know, a beef loin or something like that. But it's really more about the people and the places and the art of butchering. But it has a ton of recipes and actually really good looking recipes. And you have recipes from the people you talk to. And then you've got like the second half of the book, which is just like recipes. And so it's, I think if anybody's into meat and want to figure out how to either get in with their butcher or do their own butchering, this is probably a good book to get a hold of. And I like your writing style too.
Well, thank you. I mean, this is my fifth cookbook. My first two, I wrote a book called Have Her Over for Dinner, which is teaching guys how to cook for girls. That worked well. I met my wife. And then I followed that up with a book called The Southern Gentleman's Kitchen, which is my chance to tell my story, being born and raised here in the South. And during that book, I started introducing my readers to, you know, other folks that I felt like were upholding the quality of a Southern gentleman, being, you know, hospitable and generosity and intellectual curiosity. And so that kind of started me down this path of telling other people's stories. And I released a book called The South's Best Butts, where we started to go out and kind of follow this similar format of traveling the 12 states of the barbecue belt, meeting the pit masters, getting their tips, their secrets, and of course, showcasing their recipes and giving you sort of a slice of the life of being kind of right seat with me in the Piper Plain or on the road. And we followed that in 2020 with my release of Serial Griller. And that was kind of taking the barbecue book and upending it, doing everything that was low and slow and changing it to hot and fast. And so I struggled, you know, for quite some time of coming up with a concept that we could maybe marry my world of barbecue and grilling, but also maybe open up and not be bound by a cooking method per se, like I had been in the last couple of books. And my grandfather being a butcher just sort of opened the door. And as I started to explore more of what was happening here in the U.S., kind of following the path that I had seen in Europe, it kind of dawned on me that this could be a general a cookbook. You know, it's something that should live in every kitchen. Yes, there's technique, but the recipes cover the gamut from, you know, barbecue grilled, raw, roasted, and fried. And as we mentioned earlier, plenty of meat, wild game, vegetables, and seafood too.
And a really good cross-section of cultural influences too. I think most of these are in the United States. I think you do go to France for one of these, but you've got Asian, Latin American, Lebanese, Southern, you know, you've got a really interesting cross-section of cultural influences too. So like you say, it's not a barbecue book, although there's some of that in there. So let's talk about butcher shops, if you will, in the United States. So I'm of the age, and I probably grew up in a place that I was growing up not, I wasn't grown up familiar with the concept of a butcher shop. We had a local grocery store that had a meat, center in the back. They did all the butchering there. That's where we got our food. Now, my dad would hunt. We'd break down, you know, whatever we got. But there was never like a local butcher shop we could go to. And I suspect for a lot of home cooks, especially younger home cooks, that's probably the case. They may have no concept of like, what's a butcher shop? Who's a butcher? They go to the Kroger. They go to, you know, the Sam's Club, whatever it is, and they get their meat there. So is that a regional thing? Is that a historical thing? Are butcher shops per se in the United States less common than they were? Are they harder to find? Are they coming back? What's the temperature of butcher shops in the United States as a place you go to get like specialty cuts of meat or, you know, ground chuck or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I start back to my family story. So my grandfather, great-grandfather, came over from Beirut in Lebanon. I traveled through France and ended up in Valdosta, Georgia, and basically kind of built a small family business. Started as a fruit stand, kind of expanded into what we now would consider a food store or sort of a specialty goods store, with my grandfather kind of taking over the butchering in-house. And in those days, you know, we didn't have supermarkets. We had local food stores. And most of the butchering really was done in-house. You would bring in whole sides of beef or quarters and break those down. And you would purvey that particular food store based on their specialty. Even when I was growing up as a kid, I remember in my hometown just outside of Lilburn, Georgia, a place called Wilkes Butcher Shop, which was family-owned, still had sawdust on the floors. It had that smell of the butcher shop. And we would go there, especially when my dad would say, we really want to grill great steaks tonight. So those are kind of my early memories. My grandfather eventually sold his store, and even my wife's great uncle, you know, talked about working at the A&P where they brought in sides of beef. They still did butchering in-house. And then nowadays we do feature my local butcher, Tommy Kelly at Kroger, and he'll be the first to tell you that, hey, we don't really butcher much in-house. It comes to us. You know, we can custom cut, we can do those types of things. I do think in general, just to answer your question, we're seeing a resurgence of butcher shops here in the United States. You know, a lot of folks are paying attention to the quality. People are maybe seeking alternative cuts. And then a big piece that I don't think you get in a lot of the chains, the Sam's Clubs of the world, is the aging techniques. So those alternative cuts and then a lot of the dry aging that we rely on for custom butcher shops. I think I could take it a step further and tell you you're also seeing butcher shops that are whole animal, like Bavette in Milwaukee, where they've chosen to be a butcher shop, but they almost have to create a restaurant on the side to showcase and teach the public what a beef tongue Reuben can taste like. And so, you know, they're able to use that whole animal not only as a butcher shop, but as a chef and a restaurateur to be able to take those from start to finish. And I think that's a really good trend that has probably expanded post-COVID, where folks are wanting to have a further connection to not only their ingredients, but also the people as well.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I live in a town that's pretty decent size. I think we're like 150,000. We're about an hour south of Portland, so we suffer a little bit from being too close to a big city. So they, like, there's plenty of options in Portland. It's a food city.
Sure.
Here where I live in Salem, it's like we don't have a, I think we just finally got a decent butcher shop that is more of a high-end boutique type butcher shop, not really every day. But I have to say, the best place I found for fresh cuts of meat, and it hadn't even occurred to me until I just went to the back of the store one day, is we have this local Latin grocery store. It's a great grocery store. It's just a cool place. And then you go to the back, and the whole back of the store literally is a meat counter. And they've got like 10 guys back there breaking stuff down. And it's like, ah, okay, so I could come here and probably get whatever I want, and probably pretty reasonably. So you just kind of have to explore a little bit, and you'll find places maybe where you can get this. It's not your Kroger or whatever your local market. But that was kind of an epiphany
sure.
to me, right? It's like, oh, okay. So as new cultural influences come in, you know, new opportunities arise. I thought that was kind of cool. And you even kind of speak to that a little bit, I think, in your book, which I thought was awesome.
Yeah, the Carniceria, we headed to Enterprise, Alabama, where we met Omar, and he owns Carniceria Specialty Meats. And man, I'll tell you what, that is a busy, busy little shop. And he's not only doing the custom work behind the scenes, but as you mentioned, folks were showing up to have kind of pre-cooked meals, if you would, fajitas, carnitas, kind of a lunch counter. The guy couldn't stop the entire day, but you're exactly right. I live in Nashville, Tennessee. One of my favorite roads is Nolensville Road, which is where you have a lot of the folks that have come from elsewhere. And those are some of the best places to procure ingredients, to pick up lunch. And you mentioned it, you know, a little bit earlier at the top of the segment that we're so fortunate here in the United States that everybody came from somewhere else. And one thing that we always bring is our food. And I've been a big proponent of that, not only in barbecue, which is typically a bit of a, I think people are afraid of change in barbecue, but if you actually study barbecue, it's been changing since it was created. And so I think that all these other cultures and mixes, especially in the world of butchering, you know, there's different techniques, there's different cuts. When we went to Williamsport, PA, we butchered a whole hog more in an Italian fashion. So we wanted that pork belly instead of maybe cutting it into ribs like we might have a Southern butcher do for the porchetta. So I think that is really a good thing to speak to. The local carnicerias, you know, you've got maybe Middle Eastern shops that do halal and those types of things. So a lot of diversity there if you don't feel like you're getting the cuts or the quality from the local supermarket.
Let's say I find a butcher in town, and let's say I've never been to one. It could seem very intimidating, first of all. You know, you go to the Kroger, you go to the meat section. You don't have to talk to anybody if you don't want to. You just kind of look around. Somebody might ask you if you have a question, and they'll be like, yeah, that's on sale, whatever, the pork butt. Get the pork butt. You go into a butcher shop and it almost feels intimidating because it's like, okay, I'm in the place of an expert, and this is what they do, and I know nothing about it. How can I get over some of those? Does that make sense? Like,
yeah, no, it does.
You know, like I walk in, same thing with a fishmonger, right? If you know nothing about fish, they're obviously more than happy to help you, but it's like you don't even know what to ask sometimes, and you don't want to look like you don't know anything. Anyway, so how do you go into a butcher shop for the first time? What do you do as a home cook?
Well, you probably haven't been to my Kroger because Tommy Kelly, he's walking the floor. It's the reason I featured him, and he's the one that's out there giving out advice left and right. But you are right. You know, the larger supermarkets are going to be a little bit less personal. And really, that's kind of the heart and soul and the thesis of this book is that I want you to create that relationship with that local butcher. It's a tough job, you know, and I think it deserves being highlighted. And in the introduction, I make an argument sort of that the butcher is the person that's constantly having to give, right? You walk into the butcher shop and some people are quite demanding. Hey, I want to have not so much of this, a little bit more of that. Can you cut it at a quarter pound and tie it and have it ready in 15 minutes? The butcher says yes. You know, all those different types of components that are out there. My favorite is that they're probably the most underpaid cooks or chefs that are out there because the question always begs itself, how do you cook this, right? Where the butcher says, hey, this is a lean cut. It needs to go over direct heat on a fire. Or it's something that maybe needed to be braised or something along those lines. So, yeah, I mean, I would say that maybe there's a touch of intimidation, but that service aspect, that the quality of giving is something that most of them are wanting to do. And quite often, when you're asking for things, that's where, as a butcher, they go down that kind of rabbit hole that you never stop learning. You know, people often ask, how do I become a butcher? And yes, there's unbelievable texts and there's schools and there's workshops, but the vast majority of people that I met throughout my travels throughout this book was learning by doing. It was apprenticeship. It was spending time and energy and effort to learn that trade. And that trade is evolving because, you know, culturally across the world, we treat, you know, things differently. And that's why we have different cuts and different techniques. And it was really my job to kind of give as much of a cross section, but at the heart and soul is that person. And that person ultimately does want to help serve you. Because if you get a great piece of meat, you're going to come back, and they're in business too.
Yeah. And it's a good point you raise. We can become, like, even with agriculture, but meat especially, you can become disconnected to where it comes from, right? You walk into a Safeway, for example, or an Albertsons or whatever, wherever you're at, and it's like, oh, here's a bunch of meat in plastic containers. I see those are country-style pork ribs. I don't even have to think, like, where does that even come from? How does that even get to the store? You just go pick it up, you take it home, and you cook it up or whatever. So, you know, reconnecting to the people that are that intermediate link, I think, is fascinating. And if you're serious, you know, there's different types of home cooks too, right? There's like the survival home cooks where it's like, I'm just trying to feed my family. I don't need to be fancy and I can't spend a lot of money. I get it. And then there's the home cooks that are like, I want to do what they do on the Food Network, right? I want to get crazy and fancy. And that's like the other end of the spectrum. But I think there's a lot of room between those for average home cooks to explore the world of butchery. Go talk to your butcher, find cuts of meat you may never knew existed.
Yeah, I mean, I think you bring up a great point. I'm a home cook and I have two kids. I travel. So when I write cookbooks, I want to write books that people are going to use. I want them to be stained and the corners bent and all those other aspects. So there's a lot of recipes in there that are focused on weeknight meals that I cook for my family all the time that are super affordable. You want to be able to have dinner ready in 15, 20 minutes and be able to execute something along those lines. You know, at the same time, it's a Saturday morning book with a cup of coffee sitting out. And, you know, I want you to come on the road with me and travel to places like Cambridge City, Indiana, where we meet the Rim family that is actually, you know, producing cuts, right? So you can actually bring animals, including wild game. But you can purchase maybe a whole animal and have them split that. So you're a little bit more connected. But that was more of an actual meat production facility that's still family owned and tied to its roots. So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I want people to look at this book as through the lens of the butcher. I'm getting kind of great storytelling, get a little bit of travel, but I'm getting a general cookbook that should be on every shelf. For the grilling purists, for the barbecue, even those folks that might be vegan or vegetarian, there's a lot of content that's catered to their needs as well.
Okay, I'm gonna ask you a question that's not necessarily book centric, but I'll put you on the spot here. But I'm always seeing things that are like, here's the new trend for grilling season. Here's the new cut of meat. Like I don't know why, but I'm seeing a lot of stuff lately. It's like, get a chuck roast and cut it into steaks. It's like, okay. So in your mind, what's the big thing coming, do you think, for this grilling season? Is there a big thing coming, or what are you going to be grilling a lot of?
Yeah, I mean, I think my favorite steak on a grill is what we call the ribeye cap, spinalis muscle. So my wife, for example, loves filet mignon. All the oohs and ahs, right? It's tender, but it lacks flavor. You know, I'm typically going to be someone along the lines of a skirt steak or a ribeye, maybe a flank, maybe a T-bone porterhouse. But the ribeye cap, and if you envision a ribeye, for those that are listening, you know, obviously there's typically a big eye, which is a nice kind of fatty eye, in the center or top left or right of the steak. And then what falls below that is going to be a piece that's a little bit more firm, if you will, in texture. But the very top is that spinalis muscle. It's kind of laced with fat and flavor throughout. And so a good butcher shop will actually cut that whole. And then maybe roll it almost like a pinwheel and tie it, if you will. And you can grill it typically in a 6 to 8 ounce portion. And you're getting the best of all worlds. You're getting that real big, beefy flavor that you're going to get from a traditional ribeye cut along with the tenderness of a filet. So we approach that in the book, which I think is fantastic. Another cut that honestly for me, I try to not be on social media too much, but sometimes my late night evenings of watching food and all those different videos. The beef hammer, which is one of my favorite cuts that we explored. And it's actually really big in Germany, of all places, but it is the shank on the leg that's been Frenched. So, you know, the bone is clean and it looks like a big hammer, a big mallet. And that's approached more in the barbecue world where you're maybe smoking that for a period of time and then finishing it more in a braise. And that can be kind of like a roast or like a smoked brisket, super affordable as well. And I think that's probably the big shot that when you turn to the first page and you see the cover title, you'll see this big beef hammer sitting there. That's another great trend that I do have to say that I kind of went down that rabbit hole of social media and had to give it a try.
How many people will that feed?
Oh, goodness. I mean, you're going to get different sizes, but it's typically at least 10 to 12. Again, you can do it pulled with potatoes. I sometimes will make it into like a taco, or you can do kind of a Middle Eastern style with some pita and tzatziki and olives and all that good stuff as well.
But man, what a centerpiece for like a backyard event, right?
Sure.
You pull that baby out and people are going to be like, what is going on? That would be cool. So the ribeye cap, like if I went to a butcher shop and I said, hey, can I get a ribeye cap? They'd know what I was talking about and be able to.
Yeah, probably. They definitely would. You know, most places will probably specialize in it. So the actual cap itself is really a flat cut, if you will. So if you're envisioning kind of the ribeye itself, they will actually remove that entire cap. And then, as I mentioned, they'll typically portion it out into steaks and then roll it for you. So you get more of a fillet looking piece. If not, you know, you can buy a big ribeye and you can actually cut the cap off yourself and tie it. And you could use that as a individual steak. Obviously, the bottom portion is still a fantastic piece. You may take the bottom portion and slice it thin and make a good Philly cheesesteak, or just cook it as a smaller portion of steak as well. But if you are going to source it, you're going to want to source from the butcher. If they aren't doing the cap itself, you just want a thicker cut ribeye because you need enough mass to be able to get the portion to make it, you know, worth your time.
All right. In a minute, I'm going to ask you where we can find you and your social media and all that good stuff. And I'll put all this in my show notes, too, so people have one place they can go to find it all. But is there anything we haven't told people about your book, about butchering, any message that you want to make sure we get across that we haven't talked about before we get there?
You know, I think for me, it was a chance to reconnect with family. Having the opportunity to kind of posthumously visit with the story of my grandfather and great-grandfather that came to this country, you know, and have had a trade that's been running for a long period of time that essentially stopped with my uncle. He wasn't a butcher. He became a banker. And it's something that I've picked back up. Was just a really fun experience. The last couple of books have been really not tied to me. I'm just more of the grand conductor of the circus. But being able to pause for a minute and share just that story and that kind of little special touch to me, and then obviously showcase the Lebanese food that is a big soundtrack to my current life that's persisted throughout several centuries was really a fun piece. But I think we really hit on it as a whole that it's a general cookbook through the lens of a butcher. It should be on every shelf in the sense that no matter your dietary needs or your types or tastes or cuisine, you know, you are getting that weeknight meal and you're getting that Saturday road trip as well.
Awesome. Yeah. And your passion for it comes through loud and clear. So I'm glad you mentioned all that and the stories, and you know, you have your personal background in there too, but the stories are really well done. And I won't say coffee table book, but I think you said Saturday morning book. That's a great Saturday morning and a cup of coffee book. I think that's a great description of it. So Matt, where can we find you if people want to check out your other work? I know you've done other books that you mentioned at the top of the segment, but do you have social media or anything else you want to highlight for the listeners?
Yeah, I am not someone who lives on social media every day, but in the moment you can find me on Instagram. It's just Matt R. Moore. And also my website follows the exact same thing. So Matt R. Moore. And we've got obviously a ton of video and content out there. We're in process. Was really fortunate to shoot a TV series last year for LG Network, where we explore really cool topics like barbecue, hot chicken, pizza as well here in Nashville. And we're going to be heading out on the road here to shoot the second season as well. So a lot of content related to my past books. So this will be book number 5. with video as well, and some in the moment fun.
Okay. Well, I'll make sure I'll get all that in the show notes, link to your new book, Butcher on the Block, Everyday Recipe Stories and Inspiration from Your Local Butcher and Beyond. Very well done. I really enjoyed it. So I can't wait to check out the other stuff you've done.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for being here.
Appreciate it.
Hey, I hope you found that conversation with Matt interesting. There's a lot to unpack, and we could probably talk for a long time and have multiple episodes dedicated to the art of butchery, or at least, you know, the concept of visiting your local butcher shop from a home cook's perspective. There's just a lot to it. Matt's book, Butcher on the Block, Everyday Recipes, Stories, and Inspirations from Your Local Butcher and Beyond, would be a great starting point for that. Not only is it, as I mentioned in our conversation, part travel essay writing, but it's actually packed with a lot of really, really great recipes as well, and great photography, I have to say. It's very well done. Matt mentioned that his photographer, Andrea Barron, does a great job, and I couldn't agree more. So it's not only a very functionally useful book, but it's a beautiful book as well. Again, the show notes for this episode will be at kitchencounterpodcast.com/228. So all that stuff that Matt and I just talked about, namely this book, the other books he's written, social media, things like that, will be in those show notes. So Matt, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule, especially I know you have a book coming out this week. So I really appreciate you taking a few minutes to swing by the show and chat about your new book. Don't forget also, folks, head over to southernfood.org for the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. Look, not only is it a cool place in person, it's a cool place online. And it's the home to the Nitty Grits Network, which is a network of shows about food, drink, and culture. The Kitchen Counter Podcast is a member of the Nitty Grits Network. So head over to southernfood.org and see what they've got going on down there and check out some other shows on the network. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for another episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Again, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day to listen to what I have to say. Thanks for welcoming Matt into our little community of home cooks here. I really, really appreciate it. Whether or not you're getting into your outdoor cooking season, or whether or not you do any outdoor cooking at all, I hope at least spring is greeting you with some good weather. I know we're halfway through spring already. I can't believe it myself. But I hope you're enjoying the bounty of the season, all that new produce that's coming into the markets. Get out there and get yourself some of it. Get in the kitchen and get cooking. That's all I have to say. All right, everybody. Until next time, I'm Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking.